take a little Hall & Oates break while Bill gets some headphones? He's back in action today, people. He has returned.
As it turns out, I will not be in today. I thought I was going to be in today, but as it turns out, there's a glitch in the scheduling, so I won't be back for a little while.
This is a Christmas song to me, Maneater.
Because why, Steve? Bertrand?
Because I swear I'm going to say 1982
yeah.
or 83
yeah.
at this time of year is when it was a hit.
Oh, really?
I distinctly remember like going home for Christmas break from college, and this was the big
This is the kind of
song.
Thing that Casey Kasem, should he still be alive?
And the answer is he could be. No, he might be.
Yeah, he would have pointed out to us,
right.
And we all would have went, thank you, Casey, for sharing that information with us.
It brings like very distinct memories.
And what was the year?
I want to say 82 or 83.
It was December of 1982, the first time John Hall and Daryl Oates got together to sing this. Maneater.
Are you
playing Maneater?
You're making that up, right? You didn't look it up.
No.
Oh, Wendy did look it up.
It is 1982. You were correct.
Well done, Steve.
Yeah, I told you. When you don't trust me, I'm a quick Googler.
Very nice, you guys. Very, very nice.
And it is. It reminds me of Christmas holiday time, just because it was right at Christmas break.
Then why doesn't anybody put Maneater on one of their holiday compilation CDs?
That's not my mix.
I don't understand
it. I have it.
I don't get it. Welcome to the show. It's Bill and it's Wendy. It's our first show back together in a week.
I know. It feels
weird.
I've been off
a few. You've been off a few.
You look better.
Thank you.
Better than I remember.
That's a strange compliment, but I will take any compliment at this point. I will. Now, we have a guest on today, and this is a little tricky. It's a guest that everybody around us is extremely excited that we have on. And to be honest with you, I'm not that familiar with his work, and you're not that familiar with his work. But Steve came down. He's all excited. Everybody
fan.
At the station is so excited. And explain who this is, Steve, for people who don't know.
Well, it's Rick Steves, and he's probably the biggest TV travel guy.
He does European travel,
European travel. You know, I do European travel, and I'm a Rick Steves. I would, you know, want to be. I'd love to do the sort of stuff he does. And when I take people on trips, they talk about where Rick Steves tells them to go. And he's a fascinating guy. I've talked to him a few times on the phone, but I've never met him. I'm a little jealous of you guys.
Well, you're welcome to hang out. Although
I don't want to crash your party.
You can't.
You're always invited.
I am aware of him, but I do know that he's a big proponent of legalizing marijuana.
Mm.
And that's what he's coming in to talk about today.
Yeah, he's a really interesting guy because that's one of his... In fact, I did him in the news because he's before a state Senate committee testifying
this
to him.
This morning, and
yeah.
I'm coming right here, and then he's going to be on Chicago Tonight.
But he's also a big proponent of, you know, forcing people to travel. Because
forcing people?
Well, not really forcing, but, you know, we get so insular and we don't experience other cultures, and then we start to fear other people. And his whole point is go see the way other people live and recognize that other people live just as well or, you know, valuably as you do, but just a little differently.
And is this to make us appreciate what we have more, or
it's
why?
Just to appreciate
other cultures,
the world.
And, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's not always doesn't always have to be our way. Doesn't have to be the only right way or best way.
Right.
Sometimes I travel to Berwyn and know what it's like to have a lot of mushrooms.
Actually, he's against Berwyn.
Is he really?
Yeah, never
don't tell Svengoolie that. Well, he is on the show today coming from that hearing, and it's kind of interesting. I don't smoke pot anymore, I'll be honest.
Oh, Wendy.
I'll be honest.
I
certainly
younger?
Like to have a beer or a cocktail when I get home, and I think a general misconception about pot smokers is they're like Wayne and Garth, and they just sit around and smoke pot all day. And some people do.
Yeah.
Some people don't. Some people use it as their after-work glass of wine.
Mm-hmm.
Some people use it as an anti-anxiety. I mean, in a weird way, what's the difference between smoking a little pot or taking a Lexapro? In a way, which one's more natural?
I don't know what a Lexapro is. So.
Like an anti-anxiety to chill you out.
Yeah.
Some people, I won't name names, get a little paranoid when they smoke pot, and, you know.
The people you just mentioned who you're not naming names, I don't think you're going to name their name. Uh-oh, when he's going to say their name. Uh-oh.
So, you know, were we talking last week about CBD, which is the non-hallucinogenic or not hallucinogenic, but the sort of non-high-getting part of
Oh, right.
And we were talking about those hoodies that you could vape through the
what?
Drawstring
in Colorado. Everything. There's a guy that I know who's developed this line of clothing where you put your vaping materials in your clothing. It's like all encompassing. You wear these.
And you suck through the drawstring.
Yeah, yeah.
It looks like a drawstring, but it's really how you can vape.
Yeah.
Anyway, and he talked about how he uses CBD. And I was...
CBD.
And I was doing a little small town shopping in Andersonville over the weekend, and there's a CBD shop up there.
Oh, there is. That was fast.
I know. I didn't
that was very fast.
You know, I'm having my knee replaced next Thursday, and I already told them that I really don't want to take pain pills because I get violently ill, sick to my stomach,
mm-hmm.
and there are a lot of people that have chronic pain that can't take pain pills, and marijuana is something that is useful to them. I'm not going to do it. I just don't really like getting high anymore.
Right.
I'll drink my vodka.
So the last time you did you say to yourself, well, this is the last time I will do this? Did you physically?
I just grew out of it. Maybe I tried it a little earlier than some people, and I just
kindergarten.
Maybe. That's why I had to sit in the quiet chair all the time.
Ms. Snyder, nap time ended 3 hours ago. You must wake up.
I just didn't like it. There are some people, you know, who have alcoholic beverages, and they're like, you know what? I don't really like the feeling I get from it, so they don't drink.
Yeah.
I do find it interesting that I don't know what the tax breaks are, and I don't know how much money is coming in places where it has been legalized, but Rick Steves is really a proponent of this, and, you know, everybody whined about the soda pop tax.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Could you get more money in? If people are going to use marijuana recreationally, wouldn't you rather them know what they're getting when they get it because it's regulated?
But, all right, so let's say it's regulated to the degree that you just described. Won't there still be guys selling cheaper and various other versions than what the government is okaying? Won't there be guys out there going, I can still make money off of this somehow?
I don't know why someone would buy it from someone. Here's the fearful thing.
You ever buy a beer from your neighbor who makes it in his bathtub, Bill?
I've been offered it.
That's a good point.
I've never purchased it, but it's been offered to me.
That's a really great point, Bertrand. That really is. But, you know, my kids are not 21 yet, and I've told them by the time you're 21, pot will probably be legalized for recreational use.
Mm-hmm.
And once you're 21 and your brain is finished forming, and if you want to buy some and it's legal, go ahead.
Yeah.
Because I got to be honest with you, you put together some people that maybe are underage and they're drinking, and it seems to me that sometimes they get rambunctious and maybe go out driving. You get those same people that sit around and smoke weed, they're going to play video games and eat Doritos. They're less violent. I think alcohol is a bigger problem, quite honestly.
Well, I don't know about bigger. It's a different problem. They can both be problematic. See, I've never used it. Never once in my life. And I've never been a fan of it.
Okay, Bill Clinton.
I've never been. No, he admitted.
he didn't inhale.
Smoking it, just not inhaling it.
Well, then waste of your time.
I've been in plenty of places where people have been using it. It's been offered to me hundreds of times. Thanks, but no thanks. It's not for me. But I understand where people would want to use it. I get that. I've not been a fan of it being legalized. And actually, I don't know if you were working with me a couple of years ago. I didn't know to what degree I thought it should be okay for medical reasons, and then I saw this documentary about these kids that have violent spasms, that one girl in particular, and the parents figured out that through using a various kind of marijuana, she was no longer having these seizures, and I went, oh, I've been wrong on this. There's cases like this where people do need it, but the recreational thing, I'm still kind of on
the fence. But why are you okay with alcohol being legal then? See what I mean?
Yeah. I don't know. I seem much more like I know people that drink almost every day, and I kind of am more forgiving to that. And then I know people who smoke marijuana almost every day, and I'm not forgiving to that at all.
I just go,
you're just lazy, you know?
See, and that's a terrible misconception. Both of our moms had cancer, and my mom had never used marijuana at all, and it wasn't available in medicinal properties then.
Yeah.
Although I believe she wouldn't have done it because of the stigma.
Yeah,
I mean? It's kind of old school, and it's worth talking about and to see what happens. I do believe that it's going to be legal
soon. Any minute.
I don't know about any minute.
It's coming soon. It really is. More and more states are giving into it.
A lot of pot smokers.
See, even your language there, Bill, is interesting, giving into it.
Well, I think they did give into it because there was a war on drugs, and at some point, everybody who had this war on drugs went, we can't win this war, so just give into it.
Right. Rather, maybe the terminology should be embrace it, endorse it, you know, to look
alcohol
at the tax
revenue. Alcohol used to be illegal.
Yeah, right.
Bring, you know, let's go after the drug dealers. Let's sell their product.
Yep. And then that eliminates some of them. And what scares me is what I've told my kids is, like, if you open a can of beer, you know what's in the beer.
Yeah.
If you go get a joint from someone on the street, you don't know what's in it.
Yeah.
You don't know if it's synthetic marijuana. You don't know if you could die from it.
Right.
So
right.
If it's regulated, that fear goes away.
Yeah. There's definitely something to that.
I know. It's kind of a mixed bag of tricks, but we'll definitely discuss that with Rick Steves.
A mixed dime bag of tricks, Wendy.
Good one.
Bing. That's after a week off. I think Lori Markkanen is a receptionist for the Phoenix Suns. I don't think she plays the game, does she?
Is it Lori?
I don't know.
How about that little DeBrinket?
A hat trick yesterday for the Blackhawks.
Woo!
He's 19 years old. He's younger than my children, and he scored a hat trick in an NHL game.
I know.
That's not bad. That's pretty good at 19. I'm best friends with Grant Mulvey, Wendy, former Blackhawk great Grant Mulvey.
Uh-huh.
And he and I were texting last night. I said, Grant, my best friend Grant, your record is in danger. Grant scored 5 goals once for the Blackhawks, the most in Blackhawks history. And as it turned out, that record remains intact. But we're very excited to see a guy get 3 goals in a game.
And a new guy. That's what I like.
Yeah.
And I thought I heard Mike Jacobson do some sports this morning and said that he's the second youngest Blackhawk to score a hat trick, and Jeremy Roenick still holds that title.
That sounds right. That sounds right to me.
I bet Jeremy Roenick was going, oh, come on, but not though. Don't really come on that much. Come on.
Well, it must be tough if you're the holder of any record to see somebody come really close, because you want to have that distinction. You want to be the guy who's always said, that guy did this the earliest or the fastest or the best. So that must be a kind of a mixed bag when you're watching that, right?
I don't see anybody breaking Grant Mulvey's record.
I could see somebody tying it. I can't see anybody beating it. 5 goals in a game is pretty hard to come by. So for somebody to come along and get 6, that would be really tough. Almost impossible.
How did he get 5 goals in one game? Did somebody tie the other player's skate laces together?
Well, at some point, I think he tells the story, because he had 4 or 5 fairly early in the second period, and they just kept feeding him the puck in hopes of him getting more and more goals. But, you know, he spent a bunch of time in the penalty box in that game. He got into a fight.
Which you can see on YouTube, and it's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really is. It's a pretty decent fight.
Yeah. So, Grant, my best friend in the world, Grant Mulvey's record still stands, 5 goals in a game. That's the best it's ever been for the Blackhawks.
How many have you done?
I've never scored a goal in the NHL.
What about when you were with the Suns in the NBA?
The Suns with Lori?
Yeah.
We combined to score some points.
Bill, you haven't even set 5 goals, have you?
No. In my life, I've not, no.
Are you setting goals for the new year?
No.
I don't ever do that either.
No, why disappoint anybody? Do you? You don't do that. No.
We're supposed to do it here at the workplace, you know.
Are we really?
Yeah.
Was there a mandate?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. A them date. Everything now, the language is evolving, Wendy.
A person date.
A person
not
date.
Not them.
Well.
A them date.
Yeah.
A we date. You're supposed to set goals for yourself.
I'm not gonna.
I kind of started filling it out. Every day I want to be a better broadcaster. So far that hasn't happened, so... I just keep trying. I figure someday.
Steve, did you set goals for yourself?
Oh, I hate that. When you're supposed to do that? Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't. We're bad.
No, I didn't even know I was supposed to.
My goal is to try to pay more attention to you guys.
Oh.
So far, not good.
I still have a month.
All right, we have to take a break and a full show today. Welcome back. It is really nice to have you back.
Thanks. Nice to be back.
Patty Vasquez sat in for you yesterday. It was fun hanging with her. A little girl power going on. And then you're off again on Friday?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm working, can I say with whom?
Yeah.
Stop.
Harry Tynewitz.
Yes.
That's going to be fun.
It will be very fun. I've known him a long time. You, of course, have known him a lot longer.
Best man at my wedding.
Really?
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yes.
All right, we'll talk about your wedding then
all
on
right.
Friday.
You're going to get them all weepy.
Okay.
Very emotional.
We'll look forward to that.
Like that.
Please come home for Christmas, Bill West.
I will.
Come home.
I've decided I'm going to come home for
with
Christmas.
With Lassie?
Yeah, we're going to bring Lassie and Rin Tin Tin this year. Won't that be fun?
I thought you didn't like dogs, but look at that.
Uh-huh.
Lori Kane is on the line with us right now, the owner of Treetime Christmas Creations, 22102 North Pepper Road in Lake Barrington. She and her husband, Joe, run this lovely establishment. It's like walking in a winter wonderland.
I was there Wednesday. Lori, it was bustling.
Hi, guys.
Treetime was bustling on Wednesday.
We were bustling. We loved having the energy of all our customers in there. They were all in the, getting in the Christmas spirit and having a great time. It was a lot of fun.
Well, this is the time. I have one tree up. The anniversary tree is up. No ornaments on it yet. And the main tree is going up this weekend. And I got mine at Tree Time. I got to tell you, everybody comes over and if they haven't been here for a while, they're like, oh, you finally gave in to a real tree. No, I didn't. I gave in to Tree Time.
That's our favorite comment.
It is. All right, so we're talking about these Tree Time Trend Tuesdays. That's what we've been having. So let's talk about the trend for this week. What do you have for us, Lori?
Well, this week we wanted to talk about a trend that it's been going on for a few years, and it's called the Winter Garden. And I love this trend for several reasons. So it's got a lot of light and icy, frosty, maybe some crystal in the tree. It's accented by red and some soft greens. So one of the reasons we like it is you can extend it often past winter or past Christmas because it's kind of just a wintry look. So you can just change it up, make it Christmassy, and then take off a few things that might represent Christmas to you and go, especially in like tabletop and other areas, it's just winter. So...
Well, that sounds like a good idea for, like, we do a little front porch tree, and so does some of our neighbors have some really big front porch trees. But what a great idea to add some, what, like fake birds or winter boughs?
Yeah, so that's exactly what I was going to talk about, too. So another trend is birds. So we search all over, and we buy the most unique birds that we can find because birds, like, I grew up with a bird in my tree always because they're considered happiness and joy, and a bird's nest is supposed to bring you good luck. So I always had, that was one of my memories of having a bird's nest and a bird. Lots of people love to have different birds in their trees. So, yeah, you could put a bird in there and some red berries and some just kind of white icy, and it's totally goes beyond Christmas.
I like the way that looks. Now, what about flocking? I know that, isn't that what it's called when the fake snow is on a tree?
Yes. Now, we are seeing more and more people having flock trees. I guess a lot of the TV is showing white and flocked trees. And they're really pretty. They don't even need a lot of decoration because they're beautiful in and of themselves. You add a few, like, red berries to a flock tree, and it's beautiful. So... That's another trend for
season. Lori, I was shopping at Oak Brook on Black Friday, and one of the clothing stores had a tree in there. And what they did was, and I know this will sound awful, this will sound hideous, but they took giant cotton balls, and they stretched them out, and they put them on branches of the tree. And you say to yourself, well, that probably looked like a tree with a bunch of cotton balls in it. But no, it looked like it had snowed in there all weekend.
Like fresh fallen snow?
It looked fantastic.
That's really cool.
And I don't know how they did it so effectively. What's the key to making that look right?
A lot of times, so people, they're using batting. So you go to the fabric store and get, like, batting that you might use, and that's what we use. Okay, the secret, I think, to making batting is you take that.
Uh-oh. We've got a phone issue.
Blue, and
wait, you got to repeat.
Start over. You broke away for just a second, Lori. What do you need to take?
Okay, so you can go to the fabric store and buy batting.
And batting is something you'd use to stuff in a quilt or a pillow. Is that what batting is?
Right. Yes, that's what batting is. So when we want to make fake snow, it comes out kind of like puffs of cotton, like Bill was describing, and you place it. And then if you really want to make it look good, you take spray adhesive and you add iridescent glitter.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Really can give it some. We don't always do that, but. You know, we love all things glitter.
What they had done is you can't go wrong with glitter. So they took they took batting or cotton, and then they covered it with, you know, that Department 56 makes that little, like, powdery snow. They put that on there, too. It was really impressive. I mean, they took a tree that had no personality and made it look like it was fresh from a forest.
Yes, and that's actually another trend that we see. We don't always see it up here in the north. Is we have actually like floral picks that look like cotton. Actually, cotton in a tree that looks like cotton is another thing that people are doing.
Very nice.
And that's with the like the backing on it that looks like it it was a little pod and it opened up and then cotton was inside.
Yep. Have you been seeing that? Yeah, you see cotton pods that are on trees, and that's actually very big at when we go shopping at the mart. We see a lot of that.
I like all that natural. That natural looking stuff is really cool to me. And someone has texted us, and Steve and Johnny always, I guess they have a tree that they keep up all year long, and then Johnny just kind of puts, like, different ornaments, like a Valentine's Day tree. And people can do that, too, but I'm not going to. I'm not going to. But I do like the idea of the winter garden, because that's something, you know, it seems like later and later we're getting our tree up because we're busy. Mm-hmm. And then it's like a lot of people say, oh, the first week of January, you have to take your tree down. I don't want to take it down that early. So now if you make it a winter garden tree, you can leave it up a little longer. What's the deadline on this?
Well, it's just the politically correct way to keep it up as long as you want. It's a thing, right, if you'd like.
Oh, wow, you're pushing it.
I'm pushing, but you know I'm a Christmas lover, so there you go.
Yeah.
Well, perfect. And you still have some of the favorite models left. People don't believe that there are various looks to all the trees at tree time, and you need to get in early because maybe the one you're looking at sells quicker. So you're still good to go, and tree time is still open. And what are your hours?
We are open on weekdays from 10 to 6, then weekends, Saturday and Sunday, from 10 until 5.
All right, it's going to be a Merry Christmas and a flocked Christmas.
Yes. It's flocked in a garden, beautiful, snowy Christmas. So thank you guys so much. We look forward to seeing everybody out here, and come get in the Christmas spirit with us.
Thanks, Lori.
Thank you, Lori. It's 22102 North Pepper Road in Lake Barrington. Tree Time Trend Tuesday. All the latest Christmas decorating trends with Tree Time's Lori Kane. And we are giving you, the listener, a chance to win a $250 Tree Time shopping spree so you can update your holiday decor with your favorite trend. All you have to do is enter online at WGNradio.com/contests. You know, it's funny because I'm thinking about this song, Same As It Ever Was. It's not the same. Technology is always changing, and it's a Tech Tuesday. Bridget Carey from CNET on the line with us. Bridget, how are you?
I'm doing good. Sometimes things are changing so fast, though, that they change so in bad ways, and we have to call out companies to take them to task to handle things.
Ooh, like what?
I don't know if you heard this news about YouTube and what it's had to do to take down tens of thousands of videos that feature disturbing content aimed at kids.
Okay, this is all you're doing, because when we talked to you last time, you were crazy about Peppa Pig and things going on that kids shouldn't be seeing.
That was just the tip of the iceberg. We're talking about, it went deeper after we talked, of things that actually exploited children in videos, things that were being targeted by predators. And it was pretty disturbing. So YouTube removed ads from 2 million videos and about 50,000 channels that featured some of this disturbing content. Actually took down 150,000 videos and turned off comments for over 600,000 videos targeted by child predators. So basically you have this whole ecosystem of YouTube that just was going unchecked for so long. And it took like multiple news stories that kind of built and built and built from since we talked, where kind of more and more of the onion was being peeled back and going, wait, people are making money off kids being tied up in videos and people are searching for this stuff. And then it kind of even peeled back another layer today on top of it, where if you start, you know how when you do a Google search, it has an autocomplete. So if you search for, like, you know, what's the best recipe for, and it'll fill out chocolate chip cookies, because, like, that's the most common thing to search for. Well, there were some disturbing things that sexual predators could type in, and if you did, you would see autocompletes for things that are very terrible. So it's kind of like a check on, hey, your computers are not having humans kind of watch over some things.
How many videos are available on YouTube, Bridget? Do you even have a guess? It's got to be millions and millions, right?
Yeah. I mean,
right. So it's inevitable that some stuff
is going to sneak through, right? They have to know that.
Money off of this, and there's algorithms for advertisements to automatically play, and you know there was even backlash earlier in the year from a lot of big advertising companies that were realizing, wait, my AT&T ad is being played on what? And so a lot of big companies said, if you can't get your act together, YouTube, and actually you know be able, you're able to search so much about us, make so much data on us as individuals and what we like and we don't like.
Yeah.
You tell me you don't have a computer system to be able to flag when something is wrong, and so. It's kind of like something YouTube, quote-unquote, never invested in, right? You know, yeah. Everybody cared to. Maybe now there's going to be maybe some more effort put into having these automatic algorithms. Maybe check for the gross stuff, too.
All right, I got to ask you about this net neutrality. I have a teenager who is freaking out about this net neutrality. I don't know much about it other than... I guess a couple years ago, then President Barack Obama made it so internet service providers could not charge you for additional things. What am I missing on this, and what's going to happen with it?
Well, the reason teenagers are freaking out is because it's actually a really hot topic on Reddit and everywhere, and it's all over my Facebook feed. People are saying that the internet will be forever changed with the FCC trying to say that internet providers can basically do whatever they want. Before there were rules that said, hey, you have to treat every website fairly. You cannot, I'm going to make this up, but Verizon, you cannot give preferential treatment for your customers to watch AOL content and charge more for Netflix to encourage people to watch, you know, the videos you make money off of versus like a smaller website that's up and coming and doesn't have a deal with you.
Or they could even slow down like the bandwidth and stuff. Isn't that true?
Right. If you look at other countries, some countries actually do a system where if you want internet, you have to pay for packages. You want Instagram? That's part of the social package. $5 for that. Like they treat the internet like cable packages. And really there's the philosophy that shouldn't everything on the internet be a utility and be free to access and be at the same speed as everything else, so that way no one's picking favorites and the little guy can also have his say versus like the big website too. And that's where the big debate comes in. Hypotheticals like someone will slow down. Groups like Verizon have spoken out saying, we will not have a slow lane and we promise, you know, to treat it all fairly. But, you know, people go, okay, do you want regulations? Like you have rules on the road, you know, we don't let everything be free there. We have traffic lights, you know. And then there's people who say, you know, let the market sort itself out because you and I may unsubscribe from our cable if they start doing that. Problem is, you don't have any cable choices or internet choices, do you? You usually have two at best.
Right.
So that's where there's that ethical argument of like, should there be more regulation because the market may not be able to sort itself out when you don't have a lot of consumer choice.
Who makes the decisions on this, Bridget? Is it Congress?
Well, Congress could step in and do something, but it's right now it's the FCC.
The chairman, who is a Trump supporter and a Trump...
He's formerly a Verizon lobbyist lawyer, too. You know?
Right, and he's Trump's FCC chairman, Ajit Pai. He wants to destroy net neutrality. And the proposal will be voted on by the FCC on December 14th. So this is coming up.
It's a Republican majority. It usually is a majority on whoever is president at the time. And so that's why everyone's flooding with comments. I don't know if everyone crying out will make a difference when you have a Republican majority vote. But that said... people are still very upset and are speaking out and doing what they can to maybe influence the fact that it shouldn't be a free-for-all and that. Because everyone right now, all these internet companies, they want to become media behemoths too, you know? Like, everyone wants to be the provide you the pipe for the internet but also provide you the content, and they want to make more money off the content they own. You know, Comcast, NBC, and Verizon has their own, and so that's where it's going to get a little sticky, I think.
All right, what if they charge more for Twitter and Donald Trump has to pay more in order to get access to Twitter? First of all, I guess it wouldn't matter. He's got the money. But I don't know what's going to happen. What can we do to protect ourselves? Nothing? Keep our fingers crossed?
Yeah, I don't want to be the one who's negative, but I keep thinking, like going on Facebook and clicking like that you feel really passionate about it isn't changing anything. If you want to make a difference, you can make a difference by voting, right? That's what they always say.
All right, so we don't know anything we can do. Just keep our fingers crossed. And on December 14th, they're voting on this net neutrality. So maybe you'll be limiting your social media presence on December 15th. Who knows?
Maybe.
Let's hope it doesn't go downhill that fast. Right?
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Bridget, thank you very much. Appreciate talking to you.
All right, thanks.
She's Bridget Carey, senior editor at CNET. You can find it at CNET.com.
Thank you, Steve. A quick programming note, a change in our programming schedule. Rick Steves, who is beloved by not just Steve Bertrand, but everybody who works here at WGN. Everybody,
everyone.
Every single person who works here has come in and said, you guys are really having Rick Steves in today? And the answer is yes. He and Chris Lindsay were scheduled to be on now, but because they're potheads, Wendy... They are not on time. They're late. And they'll be here in 20 minutes.
They just wrapped up their testimony there before Senate committee
today.
So I'm just following that, and they just kind of wrapped up. So.
Right. So they will be here at 11:30.
To talk about the marijuana.
I'm anxious to talk about this. Steve Bertrand, I heard you and John Williams talking about it.
Anxiety, the marijuana would help that.
Yeah.
It's just, it's an interesting topic, and it's just really... socially frowned upon.
Yes. By some. By others.
It seems the majority of people.
Well, I think it's a complete generational.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's true, because there are a lot of older people. I talk like I smoke pot. I don't. But I realized that the other day. But there are a lot of...
You realize that you don't smoke marijuana the other day?
Yeah, what are we doing? No. But I realized, reviewing kind of what I was saying on the air. But there are a lot of people our age who do. Yeah. Recreationally, so maybe it's not necessarily an age thing. I think younger
people just
got
a bad stigma, and you know, and this sounds, I shouldn't even say this, but yeah, I mean, honestly, my kids don't drink at 14 and 18. Mm-hmm. I'm relieved, I'm happy, but I've got to tell you, I'm a little surprised.
Because of peer pressure?
Well, just because that's kind of what you did when you were 18 mm-hmm. years old. Mm-hmm. Maybe not you, but maybe me.
I would say most kids do.
And I'm shocked. I'm happy, trust me.
Right.
And
why don't they? Is there a reason they're not?
Michael hates it. I don't know if maybe he's seen me and Jim drunk, and then, hey, we've done our jobs. If we can be a deterrent to our kids drinking.
That's the reason you guys drink too much, is to show the kids it's
bad. Yeah, this is what you don't want to do. Michael doesn't like that that he sees people who drink it lose control.
There is that.
And I got to be honest with you, I don't see many people lose control on pot like I do on booze.
Mm-hmm.
I really
that's
don't.
That's probably true. Right.
So, well, we'll talk about that at 11:30. If you're up for it, if you're in on it, if you want to find out what is going on, because there is a city council meeting that's just wrapping up, and then TV travel guide Rick Steves will be here, and he speaks out for legal marijuana in Illinois.
All right, so that's coming up later on. If I were to say to you, who is the person least likely to say something controversial of all your celebrities, of all your famous people, who would you say to yourself, well, they're not going to say anything controversial because they're that guy or that girl? Who would it be?
John Davidson.
John Davidson's a good guess, indeed. What about Angela Lansbury? Would you ever expect Angela Lansbury to say something that would get people angry? That doesn't seem
possible.
Doesn't seem
no,
right.
No, I really... Well, right? I do. She seems like... She's getting crotchety in her age.
Well, she just said something over the weekend that a lot of people are upset about.
Uh-oh.
I will share it with you. She says, Angela Lansbury says, that women must sometimes take blame for being sexually harassed.
What is wrong with women that say this? What is wrong with this?
I'll read you her full statement. And I have to say, like, when I first heard this, I said, oh, Angela. No, hey, Angela. In my best Tony Danza.
Yeah, nice. Who's the boss?
Don't please don't say women should ever be. But let me. I'll read you her words. British American actress.
Which is it?
She's both.
Okay.
She is both. British American actress Angela Lansbury says that attractive women must sometimes take blame for sexual harassment, adding that beauty has backfired on us. The 92-year-old acting veteran
shared her views with Britain's Radio Times this week, this according to the Telegraph newspaper, wading into the scandal that has rocked Hollywood in recent months. Here's what she says. There are two sides to this coin. We have to own up to the fact that women, since time immemorial, have gone out of their way to make themselves attractive. And unfortunately, it has backfired on us, and this is where we are today. We must sometimes take blame, women. I really do think that, although it's awful to say we can't make ourselves look as attractive as possible without being knocked down and raped, she continued.
She is pissing me off right now with all of this so far.
Listen, I'm certainly no translator of Angela Lansbury's, although I did make some extra money in college doing that, but I'm no longer in that position. I think what she's trying to say is women spend a lot of time trying to make themselves look attractive, and unfortunately, because men basically are Neanderthals, they don't know what to do when there's an attractive woman near them.
So how is that our fault?
It
is the man's fault.
It is.
Listen, I have to wear a lot of makeup because without makeup, I look like James Spader,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine if you're a guy. I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at people like Cindy Crawford, to me, the most naturally beautiful person ever.
Mm-hmm.
Grace Kelly, mm-hmm. another person. Catherine Deneuve. These are people who are just absolutely beautiful and don't need to be made up.
Right.
And so because they were born beautiful, and maybe they want to put on a little mascara to make themselves look prettier. That's their fault then if they get harassed or shoved down and raped, as
right.
Angela Lansbury says.
Right.
Shame
right.
on her. And last I checked, she's not a natural beauty.
Ooh.
Shame on her.
I understand what she's trying to convey. I don't think, and she, believe me, Angela Lansbury, for years and years and years, has been able to get whatever point across she wants to, either through her acting or her words, but I think she's wording it improperly. I get her message. Her message is, unfortunately, because of the society we live in, women do their best to look attractive, and unfortunately, guys don't know what to do with that. We can't process
but
that.
But she went on to say that women have to take some of the blame, so we're not supposed to put makeup on and present ourselves
that's
beautifully.
Right. That's where it gets problematic.
That's totally wrong.
Right. Agreed.
There's no way any part of that is right. And I know what she's saying, but to say that it is kind of a woman's responsibility as well, that she's dead wrong.
Right.
It's a man's responsibility to keep it together.
That's the problem that I think she's trying to hint at and isn't getting it across properly, is that because guys' brains aren't developed, we don't know
what... I don't
buy
that.
You don't buy it?
No. Come on, Bill.
The impetus should not be on men, and it should not be on women. It should be, because of society, it should just be, if a woman wants to look attractive, and honestly... Guys want to look attractive, too. We're not as good at it as women are, but we want to. But it shouldn't be – there's no woman who's to blame for any harassment or any attack because she looks too good. That's
right.
Impossible.
But she's saying that we have to take some of the blame. And then these goofy people texting us. I agree with her. I think some women ask for it. Oh, God. Just some of these. It's not about mascara. Think about how some women dress. Again, it doesn't give you a right to touch something or grab something.
If a woman shows up completely naked,
you still don't have a right to touch it.
Right. If a woman shows up at your place of business and she is without any clothing whatsoever, that's not an okay signal for a guy to just be able to have his way with her.
All right. You know... All right, listen to this. I just sometimes listeners make me sad and yet laugh. I laugh in the same breath.
All right.
Would this be a good time to say I never went to bed with an ugly woman, but I certainly have woken up with a few?
No, this would be a terrible time to say.
Listen, I get what she's saying in the sense that, you know, women do try to look beautiful. Everybody tries to look more attractive. It doesn't give anyone carte blanche to say something or touch something.
Right.
And so to say that it's a woman taking the blame, we kind of should take the blame. No. We shouldn't.
Do you remember there was a comedian and actor named Rick Dukeman, who's no longer with us. Do you remember him?
Yes.
All right. So I worked with him at the Improv once, and he used to do this long thing about cleavage. He goes, I don't understand cleavage. He goes, because it's a woman's way of saying, look what I have, but if you look at it, you're the bad guy. And I'd think about that, and I go, he's got something there.
That's looking.
Right. There's a huge difference.
Listen, there are times I've worn a low-cut dress, and I've caught people looking, and I'm like, hey, it's working.
Well, you always bring those pencils and keep dropping the pencils, and that, you've taken it too far, Wendy.
Looking is not the same as saying something or motorboating or touching.
Right.
We have to take a break, and we have a lot of people that want to talk.
Your thoughts on this? We're at 312-981-7200. Is Angela Lansbury right? Well, is she ever wrong, really? But in this particular instance, is Angela Lansbury right? She says a lot of the blame is put on the women for dressing too sexy, looking too good. Your thoughts, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Well, I never thought I'd say this, but Angela Lansbury has said something very controversial. A lot of people have said. She says that women must sometimes take blame for harassment. She says because women make themselves look beautiful, they're kind of in a weird kind of way giving an okay for guys to harass them. But you disagree, and I disagree, certainly. We understand her message, but the wording of it isn't quite what it should be.
Somebody says, Wendy, it's not about the makeup. It's about dressing provocatively. Someone also says, so this means that if someone has a lot of money, it's okay to rob them. Yeah. It is kind of saying that.
Yeah, in a weird way, I guess.
I don't know. I don't know who to talk to. Hi, Lou.
Yes.
What's up?
I was just listening to your station and listen to it every morning.
Awesome. Are you appalled or are you happy you're listening right now?
Well, I always listen because I've listened to WGN for years and I enjoy everybody's station on your station. You know, both of you guys have got a point. Wendy, you know, you see it your way, you know, and you see, you know, you talked about your low cut, you know, you show cleavage and you thought that that was, oh, it's working. Well, yeah, it did work and it worked. And like Bill said, yeah, it did. And, you know, I enjoy looking at pretty women. Don't get me wrong. I might be old, but I'm not dead. Okay. However, you know, I'm a very devout Catholic. You know, I'm a member of the Knights of Columbus. You know, I mean, we're very, very, very involved in our church. And I've even had conversations with our pastor at church, and I've told him, I says, you know what? When you see some of the girls that come to your church, doesn't that somehow make a statement? They come with jeans that are so tight-fitting and 5-inch heels and low-cut dresses that hang over the shoulders. You're going to mass in this kind of garb? Whatever happened just dressing nicely, you know, pantsuit, slacks, anything. But it's gone past that now, and it's become provocative. So, again,
can't people wear what they want, you guys? Come on, listen to yourselves.
Well, you know what? It's like, you know what? I hate to say this, but, you know, throw a Hustler magazine at a man. What's a man going to think? Okay.
I don't know this joke. You
know, most men will tell you, okay. But, you know, you put a girl out there that dresses so provocatively that it leaves absolutely nothing to the imagination. This is what's happening. They've pushed the envelope, and they've gone past dressing nicely to using every attribute they got to attract a man in some way. Well, you know what's going to happen as a result.
What? What is going to happen? It still doesn't give you carte blanche to touch them.
Sometimes you're going to have, you know, the incorrect thing happening, put it, for lack of a better term. However, they're enticing, they're promoting, and I think Angela Lansbury, I think she's saying things that a lot of people are afraid to say.
But, that's why I'm having a hard time with it is I understand her message. I don't think she words it quite properly, but I understand. I don't think any of the blame falls on any woman who is sexually harassed in any way, shape, or form. I don't think the blame is on them, but I understand her point of if you dress that way, you should expect guys to not be able to process it properly.
No,
you know, I agree. No means no. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
It no means no. But to sit there and tell no means no and then just continually, you know, put it out there, I just think that it's both ways. Both people are to blame, not just the men. The women are promoting it, men are taking it.
I feel feel like I'm going to throw up. You guys are making me so sick to my stomach. It's, I don't agree with a woman wearing a low-cut dress and high heels and really tight jeans to church, but that's her option to do that if she'd like to do it. But she's doing it to get laid in church.
Right. But you know that there are guys who just, they can't figure out what to do with that information. They see a woman who's dressed that way, and they're like, I don't know what to do now. You've met guys like
and
that.
And that's our problem?
No, it shouldn't be your problem. It shouldn't be your problem. But I'm telling you, there's just guys that don't know what to do with that.
Well, then they need to get some help.
I agree with you.
I don't know what the answer is, Lou, but no one's telling you what to wear, are they?
No, and I don't, you know, again, I don't have to impress anybody. I'm not trying to entice.
Are your jeans baggy? Because I think that looks terrible. I think your jeans should be a little tighter on your butt.
Well, you know what? I don't wear, kind of in the middle. I wear some baggy jeans, but I do have most of my jeans are mommy, just boot cut.
Send us a picture. We want to see a photograph.
Thank you for calling, Lou, and we all could, you know, we all have our opinion here. I don't know. I think you and Angela Lansbury should go have some lunch together, Lou.
That'd be nice.
Like to meet her.
Thank you, Lou.
Appreciate
your phone call.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and we are joined by TV travel guide Rick Steves, and you have brought someone with you, Chris Lindsay, the Senior Legislative Counsel of the Marijuana Policy Project. Now, you guys just came directly from a state Senate committee meeting. Where were you just moments ago?
Where were we, Chris?
Oh, that's a bad
I'm from
sign.
Seattle.
That's a bad sign when you can't remember where you were.
I don't know where we were. We were talking about marijuana.
Uh-oh.
Well, I think we were in Chicago, weren't we?
Yeah. No, it's really fun for me coming from Seattle to come to Chicago and share what we've learned about the marijuana issue. And we had a bunch of very thoughtful, caring legislators that wanted to learn what is our experience in Washington State, because Illinois is considering doing what 8 states have done already out of the 50 in this country. It's legalize, tax, and regulate marijuana for responsible adults.
And that's the key for responsible adults. You're not saying it's okay for kids to have it.
No.
What is the age? Is it 21 or 24 where your brain is still kind of forming that they mention? This would only be for people over 21 years of age to partake in, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So this would really treat it more similarly to alcohol than anything else. So a lot of those same rules. You know, you'd have to be of age. The folks that produce it and distribute it would be highly regulated. So much different system than what we've seen up till now, which is no system at all.
And
right.
You know, Wendy, when you mentioned it, it's understandable. People would say, "Oh, you're going to legalize marijuana. What about the brains of kids?" But what you're assuming is use is going to go up, right?
And that's what a lot of people think.
But that's a reasonable assumption. But we have a track record now in my state, Washington, and in Colorado. The numbers are in. Teen use has not gone up. As a matter of fact, by Colorado's Department of Health statistics, teen use has actually gone down a little bit.
Why would that be?
I think that would be because it's no longer illegal, so it's not so sexy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's because when you have tax revenue generated by a legal marijuana market, much of that is earmarked for education and drug treatment so that kids understand the dangers of drug abuse. Also, it's very interesting when you take the marijuana out of the equation, suddenly teachers, cops, and parents have more credibility when talking to their kids about drug problems, because it's not this reefer madness stuff. But the fact is, the numbers are in. These are no hunches anymore. When I helped legalize marijuana in Washington State, we had hunches that teen use would not go up, crime would not go up, DUIs would not go up. Now we've got the statistics, and it is clear. The only thing that's going up is tax revenue.
Sales of Hostess Ding Dongs.
Sales of Hostess Ding Dongs. Well, I'm a board member of Normal, and we try to take the Cheech and Chong jokes out of it, because
sure,
it's
okay.
A very serious issue.
No, of course.
We're arresting a lot of people, not rich white guys like me, but people of color and poor people. Are getting a record for having a joint in their pocket.
Which is it's unforgivable.
It's just crazy. But I do want to stress that it's not a pro-pot law. It's a public safety law. It's a smart policy law. It's an anti-prohibition law.
Do you say that because it's inevitable that there's going to be marijuana, there's going to be people using marijuana? So,
well, here's an example. Bill, in my state, Washington, apples are huge.
Yeah.
10 years ago, marijuana rivaled apples as the number one cash crop in our state.
Really?
It's a huge black market. I don't know how it could have been so big, but it's massive under the radar.
Yeah.
Now we've regulated it, and what we've done is we have taken that thriving black market, which was empowering and enriching gangs and organized crime in our state. Mm-hmm. We've pulled the rug out from under it, and we've had that market become a highly taxed, highly regulated legal market. In my state alone, this year, so far this year, what are we? It's the beginning of 11 months into it. Mm-hmm. We have sold $1.4 billion of legal marijuana, and we have generated over $300 million of tax revenue for my state. Now, somebody might say, whoa, they legalized pot in Washington, and they're smoking it like mad. No, that's the same amount that was smoked before, but it was all black market industry. Now, it is legal.
It's safe now, too, if it's regulated. Safe. That's what scares me about getting some off the street. You don't know what it's mixed with.
Absolutely. There's so many reasons to want to take it off the streets. I bring a lot of my insights from the sensible approach to recreational drugs that Europe has, because I write all these guidebooks mm-hmm. and so on. And in Europe, they've found that it is just a blessing to have the coffee shops where the people who want to experiment with soft drugs go, and then what's on the street is the hard drugs, and the police can focus on the hard drug addicted problem, and they're doing it effectively in Europe. Here in the United States, we have a terrible opioid problem, and a lot of people think, oh, marijuana is a gateway drug. If you smoke marijuana, you're on your way to heroin addiction. No, the only thing gateway about marijuana is when it's illegal, you got to buy it from a criminal on the street who doesn't card minors, and he's got a vested interest in selling you something that's more addictive and more profitable. The Europeans, the two countries in Europe with the most progressive laws about marijuana, Portugal and the Netherlands, started their laws about marijuana in order to deal with their opioid crisis, and they've done it very effectively.
But Rick, don't you think there's some element of part of the allure, part of the attraction to marijuana to some kids is, I'm going to do something that's wrong. I'm going to do something that I'm not supposed to be doing. So if marijuana is something that they're allowed to do, won't they try to find something else to do that's wrong?
Well, if you're going to legalize, make something criminal that shouldn't be criminal with that logic, I don't know. I mean, maybe they'll go on to something different. But
all the pot smokers I know that smoke recreationally that are adults have never gone on to anything else. It's like, I have my vodka, they have that.
In the Netherlands, their hard drug addicted population is getting older and it's getting smaller.
Yeah.
As they've taken, the police see the coffee shops in the Netherlands as a firewall,
yeah.
separating the soft drug use
yeah.
and the hard drug abuse.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can look at marijuana as a Schedule I drug, like President Nixon did when he was mad at the hippies for opposing his Vietnam War. So he said, screw them, I'm going to make this Schedule I, and they'll treat them just like heroin. And, well, you know, 50 years later, we're still suffering from that now, and marijuana is classified just like the most dangerous drugs of all. In Europe, they say it's a drug. I say it's a drug. It's not good for you. It's not healthy. It can be abused, but you can't make it criminal just because you want to legalize or you want to legislate morality. My friends in Europe tell me a society has to make a choice, tolerate alternative lifestyles or build more prisons. And then they always remind me, you Americans lock up 10 times as many people per capita as we do here in Europe. Either there's something, you're an inherently more criminal people or there's something screwy about your laws. I don't think we're inherently more criminal. I just think we're locking people up because they just don't say no. And I just think the exciting news for me, coming from Washington State, where we have legalized tax and regulated marijuana for adults
for
since 2012. I think we've been at this for 5 years now. The exciting thing is the numbers are in. The track record's there. It's no hunch. There's no opposition that can say otherwise. The roads are just as safe as ever. Teens and adolescents are not smoking more marijuana. We have an amazing survey that our government does. It's called the Healthy Youth Survey. They interview 200,000 students every year between 6th and 12th grades, and they measure all this stuff. And they have found, since we legalized marijuana, that use has not gone up among teens.
In Washington State.
In Washington State.
Yeah.
I think what societies have found all over the world is there's no correlation. This is counterintuitive, but it's very important to recognize there's no correlation between how much a society consumes and how strict its laws are. A lot of Americans think there's a whole reservoir of decent people who would love to ruin their lives smoking pot if only it was legal. The fact is, anybody who wants to smoke pot does, and they do it as a criminal activity, dealing with criminals on the street. When you legalize it, it becomes safer, it becomes less sexy, you can tax it, you can regulate it, you can card minors.
Mm-hmm.
I do not see the downside of legalizing marijuana, even if you're anti-marijuana, because marijuana is here. It's not going to go away. There's no way it's going to go away. You can have it a big, thriving black market criminal industry, or you can regulate it.
And you mentioned carding minors like you would for them to go purchase alcohol. But if you have someone on the street that you're going to buy a dime bag from or whatever, you mentioned that they also have other stuff. It's not like they just have pot. They have heroin. They have cocaine. So that's where it may actually be the gateway drug, because you got a guy who's got a bunch of stuff for sale.
That's what my European friends have told me. The only thing gateway about marijuana is when it's illegal. You know, when we legalized marijuana in Washington State in 2012, we had, very careful, it was a public health law. It wasn't a pro-pot law. Not a lot of potheads were writing the law or promoting the law. It was, who was it? It was our Republican-appointed state prosecuting attorney. It was our Seattle City sheriff. It was presidents of the Bar Association. It was legislators in Olympia whose reputation was based on safety and health issues for families and children. We were endorsed by the Children's Alliance in our state. That's 200 organizations whose mission is to take care of the well-being of children. And they know that the most dangerous thing about marijuana for kids is if it's illegal. And there's so many reasons that you can frame this for somebody, whether they're liberal or conservative. It's just smart, common sense law. In Europe, they call it pragmatic harm reduction, rather than legislating morality and incarcerating people.
We have got to take a break. We are honored to have TV travel guide Rick Steves in town today to speak out on a favorite side project of his. We're not hearing much from Chris Lindsay, who is
he's taking a nap,
senior legislative counsel at the Marijuana Policy Project. We do have some questions, and we're here for the next 7 or 8 minutes. 312-981-7200. We'll take a quick break. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN. We're back, Bill.
Yeah.
We're just sitting here talking with Rick Steves, and we're here talking with Chris Lindsay, Senior Legislative Counsel of the Marijuana Policy Project. Rick, you have a lot of fans in this building. A lot of people love to travel and love watching you. And we have some people who have questions, and I figure you guys are the ones to answer it. So Kevin is on the line with us. Kevin, we've got Rick Steves in the studio and Chris Lindsay. What's your question?
Hey there, everybody. Bill and Wendy, you guys are always the best. I love these
topics. Thank you.
My question to you, your guests, we have all kinds of horrible drugs going on, pervasive in the suburbs and things. So what is your feeling in your experience as far as the addictive nature to marijuana? I've heard arguments on both sides, and I just really like to hear what you all have experienced.
It's a great question.
Well, in terms of the universe of addictive things, marijuana is not anywhere near the top. So, you know, you'll hear about things like cocaine and heroin and cigarettes and alcohol. Marijuana is at the bottom of the list.
And it is addictive, but not at the top of the addictive list.
That's
right?
Correct. Yeah? That's okay. Correct. So, you know, I don't subscribe to the, hey, marijuana is perfect for everybody and should be consumed by everybody. You know, it's a drug like any other drug. It's a solution for some. It can be debilitating for others. People have to be smart about this. The issue is, should our government simply say that nobody ever gets this ever? Prohibition has not worked.
Right.
It's created more problems.
How could this help Illinois? If Illinois legalizes recreational use of marijuana, how can this help us?
Well, there's a few things. You know, obviously, revenue is something that people think of almost immediately now when we talk about legalization, because of the numbers coming out of places like Washington and Colorado. But, you know, there's some other benefits, and I think actually bigger ones. And these include allowing law enforcement to stop going after folks on marijuana issues. And I realize we've lowered criminal penalties for some folks with low-level amounts. But you can bet that some of those same policies are out there. We still have too many black people getting arrested. Bottom line. So having law enforcement go other places, that's going to really help.
All right. That is Chris Lindsay, Senior Legislative Counsel of the Marijuana Policy Project. Rick Steves, also in the studio. What about professions that drug test, someone wants to know as they texted us? What about if it becomes legal in Illinois and your employer wants to drug test you and find out you do have marijuana in your system, which lasts in your system for quite some time? What happens there?
Well, I think in Washington State, we were very, very careful to protect the rights of employers to have whatever standards they want in their workforce. So marijuana may be legal in Washington State, but you don't have the right to be a pot smoker in this company if they don't allow it. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just saying we wanted to have a law that was very conservative and not scary for people in the suburbs who thought it's going to become one big hemp fest. And I think in Illinois, you'll want to decide just how far-reaching does your law want to be. Are you going to have home grow? Are you going to have public lounges where you can smoke? Are you going to have employers having the rights, whatever they want in their workplace? Are you going to allow retail outlets within two blocks of a public school? There's all of these issues that you need to work on. And the cool thing about the situation now for Illinois is we've learned a lot. Colorado learned that, yeah, marijuana retailers are going to package it in colorful, appealing packages that might attract children. So we can make a law that says you cannot sell lollipops and you cannot sell it in cartoonish packages or whatever.
Joe Camel.
You don't want that. Yeah. But, you know, this is the constructive way to deal with the problem rather than just say, oh, look at all the drugs we got in our society now. The last thing you want to do is legalize marijuana. You know, that's a complete non sequitur. Yeah, there is a lot of drug abuse in our society right now, and a lot of it is based on the fact that there's no credibility from the government because we've all grown up with this reefer madness kind of propaganda coming from the federal government. We need credibility. I know what it's like raising kids through all of the complicated challenges and temptations. Parents, teachers, and cops need credibility when it comes to the pitfalls of drug abuse. Drugs are here. They're not going to go away.
Right.
A lot of people oppose legalizing marijuana with this notion that people don't smoke pot right now. People do smoke pot right now. It's pervasive. And if you don't know that, you're living in a different reality. Marijuana is not going to go away. Do you want it to be a criminal activity that tends to sidetrack people into hard drug problems? Or do you want to take the crime out of the equation and deal with it like a health problem and an education challenge? One great thing about legalizing is you generate a lot of tax revenue and then you earmark that tax revenue for where you want to invest it. And a big portion of the money generated in my state goes to drug prevention and drug education. Consequently, kids know the story, and it's really important for kids to know the dangers of hard drug abuse and to recognize that for adults, it can be responsibly used with discretion in your own home as a recreational soft drug. And that's just life. It's a drug. It's not good for you. It can be abused, just like alcohol, and adults, if they want to, can use it responsibly.
It's their decision.
If they get intoxicated and drive somewhere, they should throw the book at them.
Yep.
If they go and break something, they've broken the law. But I'm really motivated, along with the inherent racism and in the fiscal craziness and the respect for law enforcement and a lot of other reasons, I'm motivated by the racism in this law. And it just is amazing that we are having a law right now where rich white people are pretty much not affected by it. And
first time that's ever happened.
Oh, it's a travesty, and it's the new Jim Crow. And,
yeah.
You know, Illinois is doing a favor for more than just Illinois when it legalizes marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Illinois is a leader in this country, and it's taking down a very tragic government prohibition on marijuana. And I just want to stress again, it's not pro-pot, it's anti-prohibition, it's pro-civil liberties, it's smart law. It's not soft on drugs or hard on drugs, it is smart on drugs.
Real quickly, we have like 10 seconds. Is it important for Illinois to legalize it recreationally before our neighbors to the north or Indiana, or is it more important that we do it first?
Depends on if you want that revenue, because if they get there first, that's where the revenue is going to go.
Guys, thanks for being here. We hope at some point, Rick, to have you up to talk about the other kind of trip and travel.
Hey, let's talk travel. I'd love to.
Excellent.
Thank you so much. Rick Steves with us today, and also Chris Lindsay, and you've got a website. We can find you, and thank you very much for coming up. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks.